This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Speaks at 7 in Fondren Hall on the second floor of the Jones Building. Tickets to the event are $15 in advance, $20 at the door, $10 for students with ID. Tickets to the meet and greet with Jeremy Scahill are also available. Prices are $150 per person, $250 per couple. Buy tickets to either event online at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 on weekdays between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. This event is a benefit for KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
Glenn Holt.
Brian Levinka.
And I think we're going to say a few words about George Carlin, aren't we?
Well, after you do the intro.
Okay. Well, it turns out that this evening we're going to have J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage in the second hour. And what's he going to do? Gay wedding songs. But before that, in the first hour, of course, we'll be talking about George Carlin. The Houston Pride Band is celebrating its 30th anniversary with a special Pride concert, coming up. And we'll be talking with them about that. And Kelly McCann, the executive director of AIDS Foundation Houston, is one of the grand marshals for this year's Pride Parade. And we'll be talking with them. And, of course, we have news wrap and the other stuff from This Way Out.
Okay, well, the legendary stand-up comedian George Carlin died, and he was kind of an icon and a hero to many of us, especially those of us that do broadcast media. His irreverent style, and including the famous censorship by the FCC of his what we call fondly the seven deadlies, which were the words that you cannot say on TV or on radio.
Or on radio.
It was actually a radio show that the original case was filed.
Exactly.
And despite all the charges concerning obscenity over the years, he was never found
guilty
or what's the other word that I was looking for? Something starts with an A. I remember him, of course, from back in those days, and he's one of the few people that I have actually spent money to go see. And I loved his sportscaster, the Biff Barf. And then the hippy-dippy weatherman, Al Sleet, who would give reports like, the weather was dominated by a large Canadian low, which is not to be confused with the Mexican high. Tonight's forecast, dark, continued mostly dark tonight, turning into widely scattered light in the morning.
And it should be noted that that case came from Pacifica Radio in New York, WBAI.
Well, there you go. And those words that you cannot say on the radio are a word that starts with S that means the same thing as having a bowel movement, a word that starts with P that means to urinate, a word that starts with a C that means to perform a certain act on a certain part of a male's anatomy. A word that starts with C that could be translated to vagina. Another
which
word,
you can say on the radio.
Another word, and I'll never forget hearing George Carlin talk about this word. It's the famous F word, four-letter F word. And he said the original meaning of that word was to strike, and that he found it odd that a word that was supposed to mean an act of sexual intimacy came from such a a word is that. And then, of course, using that word and bringing your mother into it, word that starts with an M, and then a word that starts with T that means breast. Those are all words that cannot
not be confused with transgender.
Not that T, although many T's have them. And anyway, George Carlin, dead at age 71, and he, young man. No one was ever quite like him, and never will be again, I think, and we'll miss him. So that being said, we have honored George Carlin for this evening. There was a very long article in the Chronicle about his passing. I mean, I was amazed that they gave him that much coverage, but I mean, to us, it was his due, but maybe, you know, I didn't realize.
There was a lot of coverage on NPR too.
Yeah,
I understand that the whole segment about the seven deadlies is on the internet, which you can hear, and I believe CBS had it on their website.
Right.
So you can hear all about it on the web.
I think he became more radical after that than he was before. And so first we're going to have This Way Out news wrap, and then we'll be back with the rest of our program on Queer Voices.
I'm Lee Moore.
And I'm Erica Springer.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 21st, 2008. More than 6,300 couples got marriage licenses across California during the first week gay and lesbian couples could legally do so. According to a survey of all 58 counties by the Los Angeles Times, that was more than double the number of licenses issued during a typical week in June. The first same-gender couple to marry in San Francisco, soon after 5 p.m. on Monday, June 16th, the exact time that the state Supreme Court ruling came into force, were pioneering lesbian couple Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon in a private city hall ceremony conducted by San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom. A brief press conference and public celebration followed, including the cutting of a wedding cake. Longtime lesbian comic and activist Robin Tyler and her partner Diane Olson were the first to wed in Southern California at about the same time in a Jewish ceremony on the steps of Beverly Hills City Hall, where they'd gone for each of the past 8 Valentine's days seeking a marriage license. This time they got one. They were among several same-gender couples whose combined lawsuit resulted in the historic May 15th State High Court marriage equality ruling. The vast majority of gay and lesbian couples, including a small number from out of state, began getting their licenses on Tuesday morning, June 17th. We'll have a lot more on this story, with on-scene reports from both Northern and Southern California during the first few days of Wedded Bliss later in the program.
About 250 conservative Christian ministers from across New York staged a noisy demonstration this week at the state capitol in Albany to protest Democratic Governor David Patterson's directive requiring state agencies to recognize same-gender marriages legally conducted elsewhere. That now includes California, where, unlike Massachusetts, there's no residency requirement. A number of Republican lawmakers also attended the rally. Patterson issued his directive last month after a state appeals court ruled that a lesbian couple's marriage in Canada should be recognized in New York. His order affects more than 1,000 laws and regulations, from pensions to state tax filings to child custody laws.
And perhaps inspired by California's nuptials, Tasmanian Minority Green Party MP Nick McKim said this week that he'd introduce marriage equality legislation in the state parliament when it begins its next session on July 1st. Tasmania was the first Australian state to create a same-gender relationships registry in 2004 that provides many of the rights of marriage. There's disagreement between Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's administration, which insists that marriage laws are a federal matter, and at least a few constitutional experts in the country who believe that the states are free to establish their own. Like the government of his predecessor, John Howard, Rudd's administration quashed a civil unions bill in the Australian Capital Territory earlier this year because they would have been too much akin to marriage. Some legal scholars, however, say that the federal government does not have the same veto power over state legislation.
In possibly the only pro-LGBT action during the two terms of U.S. President George W. Bush, his Department of Justice this week ordered the Social Security Administration to recognize the children of same-gender couples. The determination reasoned that while the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, bans recognizing or providing benefits to same-gender couples, it doesn't specifically prohibit benefits to the children of those couples. The opinion cites the case of two Vermont women who entered into a civil union in 2002 and wanted to pass on the non-biological parents' disability benefits to their child, who was born in 2003. Elsewhere, discrimination based on sexual orientation was included in a new law on equal treatment passed this week by the Lithuanian parliament. Religious institutions are exempted. MPs had originally removed age, disability, and sexual orientation from the new law, which covers the provision of goods and services, but now inclusively conforms to European Union anti-discrimination policies. A law banning discrimination based on sexual orientation in employment passed in 2004 helped Lithuania's bid to join the European Union.
In another country formerly controlled by the now-defunct Soviet Union, three leading gay and lesbian rights groups in the Ukraine have formed the Union of Gay Organizations of Ukraine. The Gay Alliance, Gay Alliance Circassy, and Nashmir Gay and Lesbian Center say the move will minimize administrative costs and improve their advocacy efforts. The Ukraine continues to seek EU membership, but there are questions about its commitment to human rights. The Ukraine Parliament's ironically named Committee on the Issues of Freedom of Speech has attacked increasing propaganda about gay and lesbian issues, saying in a recent report that such a situation obliges organs of state power to adopt determined and urgent steps for stopping popularization of homosexualism, lesbianism, and other sexual perversions which do not correspond to moral principles of the society.
LGBT groups from Bangladesh, China, India, Indonesia, Nepal, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka have created a network to work jointly on issues that arise in their individual countries, according to a report in the Jakarta Post. Representatives of the groups met for 5 days in early June on the Indonesian island of Bali. A spokesperson for the Indonesian group Rainbow Flag told the Post that LGBT people in those nations face similar problems of discrimination, stigmatization, and persecution from religious groups.
And finally, the creators of a new Jamaica-based website hope it will help lesbi-gay people in the Caribbean more easily communicate with each other. RainbowVibes.com is described by its founders, a gay Jamaican IT manager who now lives in Canada, and a lesbian marketing executive who lives on the island, as an online hub for Caribbean gay, lesbian, and bisexual individuals living at home and overseas, in addition to the many others across the globe. Members can create and join discussion groups, add music and videos, chat, find dates, write blogs, and read news from the Caribbean and the world. While Jamaica is notorious for being one of the most homophobic countries on earth, LGBT people face varying degrees of hostility and prejudice across the Caribbean.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 21st, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Erica Springer.
And I'm Lee Moore.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell with
Brian Levinka, and we have a special guest in the audience this evening.
In the studio.
In the studio.
And we have many special guests in the audience.
We do.
But Rudy Martinez from the Pride Band, Houston Pride Band, what was that beautiful piece of music?
That was Concertino for Clarinet, played during our winter concert back in February.
Uh-huh. And tell us a little bit about how the Houston Pride Band came into existence.
Well, back in 78, a few members got together. And
oh, back in the day.
I wasn't even alive yet. No, I'm just kidding.
I was only 5 years old.
I was four, so.
So, we're right about that same age.
I was 28.
You were 28 in 1978?
Huh?
Oh, my God. That seems so...
I'm old, Brian. I have.
You just don't look like that.
I know.
You look so youthful. I'm sorry. I digress.
Almost look as good as Joan Jett, right?
Oh, well,
even better.
I love these guys. Okay. So, to continue, in 78...
Was conceptualized in 78, right about the time the town meeting one occurred, and where Montrose Counseling Center came about, and the Montrose Activity Center.
That was a very pivotal moment for our community.
It very much was. And the gay community needed some background music. So the...
Always we have to have our little mood music. We have to
That's
have
right.
Exactly. Disco
our
balls
little pomp,
or something.
Yeah, a little pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And so some people that had horns to toot and strings to pluck and drums to beat...
got together, formed the Montrose Marching Band, and it evolved slowly over the years. During the 80s, we saw a great drop in the numbers due to the AIDS epidemic, but when the band came back together, they renamed themselves to the Lone Star Symphonic Band, and currently to what it is now, the Houston Pride Band,
right.
Back in, I believe, 94, 95.
Right. And in 1993, the band played at the... I guess it wasn't just the Houston Pride Band, but all the bands from around the country, all the GLBT bands, got together and played at the Ford Theater during the March on Washington in 93.
That is correct. And actually, the Houston Pride Band did play during both Clinton inaugurations.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Imagine
so,
that.
Why are we speaking to Rudy tonight? What's going on?
Well, we just thought we'd reminisce.
Yes,
you know,
yeah,
I'll walk
great.
Down memory lane.
But there is a concert coming.
Let's think about it a minute. The band was born in 1978, and this is 2008.
Yeah.
And
it's prime.
Do
month.
The math.
Yes.
How
30
how time flies.
Yes, 30 years. That's pretty remarkable for a group to survive.
Any gay group to
last. But as the tradition and as the institutions that developed out of that time 30 years ago, it continues and it you know went through its various incarnations. But here we are celebrating the 30th anniversary, and there is an upcoming concert that is. I mean, it just sounds so fabulous.
It is going to be absolutely wonderful. If I can tell your audience one thing about this, it's going to be an absolutely fabulous performance.
It's going to be faboo.
It's just
faboo.
It's just going to be
faboo.
Just downright faboo.
So it's a celebration of music, visibility, and pride.
That is correct.
And it's going to be at a big-time place,
mm-hmm.
Zilka Hall.
At the Hobby Center.
At the Hobby Center for the Performing Arts.
We gays are moving up in the world.
I mean.
Zilka Hall.
And that's June 27th, and it begins at 7:30.
That's this Friday.
And not only will it commemorate the band's rich history in both music, but in pictures?
That's correct. We're going to have a videography display in the lobby during, actually before the concert and then during intermission. It'll depict the chronologue, the band's history over the past 30 years.
So we get to see like the old kind of groovy haircuts and clothing with all the bell bottoms and everything?
Oh, yeah. And not
That's
only that,
great.
But we'll actually have some of the old band uniforms on display.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well,
rhinestones,
so,
I'm sure.
there's been members that have come and gone over the years, and unfortunately some of them went forever because of the plague of AIDS that hit the community so hard. But there's people that, for various reasons, they had to move away or they just had to take time away from being involved with the band. So this is not just a concert of the current band.
Correct.
it's a reunion.
That is correct. We have opened up our membership and asked our past members to come back. As a matter of fact, we have few members playing in the Houston Pride Reunion Band who played back in 78 during the inception of the Montrose Marching Band.
And then also, was Andy the original conductor?
I don't believe he was the original conductor, although he did conduct during the very late 70s as well as during the majority of the 80s.
Okay, so that's Andy Mills, and he's going to have baton in hand and join the current artistic director, Jason Stevens, on the podium to lead a portion of the concert. So that will be very exciting.
Yeah, and also Nancy Ford from Outsmart Magazine is going to be our special guest MC.
Oh, we love Nancy.
Oh, we love Nancy. Nancy wrote an absolutely wonderful article on the Pride Band, which could be found in this month's Outsmart Magazine.
Yeah, Nancy's one of our favorite people.
And we love her nuts, too.
Yes, Nancy's nuts. So we'll have to bring that back at Christmas time.
Okay, good. I was going to let that one go.
Maybe she should have those for sale in the lobby during the concert.
Nancy, if you're out there.
Ford, get to cooking. Get stirring up those nuts.
Get them nuts cooking, yeah.
For those that don't know, at Christmas time, Nancy came in and shared with us her special recipe for her what she calls Nancy's nuts, and they're very yummy.
And hilarity ensued.
Anytime Nancy's around, that's for sure hilarity is going to ensue. And so, of course, we don't give prices over the air, but
if you're interested, how could you get tickets to this wonderful concert?
Well, you can do it one of many ways, and one of them can be visiting the Houston Pride Band website, which is www.houstonprideband.org. Or you can get it at the Houston Hobby Center for the Performing Arts box office.
Walk on up and get them right there.
Yeah. You sure can.
And will tickets be available up to the night of performance? People can get them at the box office that night?
Yes, they will actually be on sale when you walk in the door.
Because, as you know, so many in our community just can't make up their minds the last
minute.
Right to
the last minute. Yeah. So, I don't know what. I'm going to go see a movie. No, I'm going to go to a concert.
I don't know.
Now, this will trump any movie, any other activity out there. I can tell you that much right now.
Yeah.
Can we talk about some of the music that's going to be played? Like, will it be flashback music to the 70s or 80s music? Or?
As a matter of fact, there's going to be a couple of pieces that will be played that are indicative of the Houston Pride Band. The names of which escape me, but a few of them are going to be played, as well as some very emotional pieces, as well as some very progressive pieces. It's going to constitute a full concert that's going to be very robust.
Something for everyone.
Something for everyone.
And then, over the years, the Pride Band's not only marched in the Pride Parade and done some special events, as you mentioned, the Clinton inauguration. Over the years, you have raised money for a number of community groups. And what are some of the groups that have benefited from the generosity of the Houston Pride Band?
Well, this year in particular, our board made the motion to start giving proceeds from our ticket sales to different community organizations within the GLBT community. We're looking at Sisters, mm-hmm. as well as PFLAG, have benefited this year. For this concert in particular, the Montrose Counseling Center is going to be the beneficiary of the proceeds from our ticket sales. And as well, they are celebrating, as I mentioned earlier in our interview, that they're celebrating their 30th anniversary as well.
So very apropos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's something special planned for after the concert.
Well, you're talking about the next evening, not the night of, because that's always special. But
right.
The next evening, the Pride Band will be marching in the Pride Parade. And it's been absolutely wild, if I can tell you. Fantastic fun preparing for this. I mean, we're talking about preparing the music for the concert, as well as preparing the music for the parade. And then also trying to learn the drill for the parade itself when we go in front of the judges. It's absolutely crazy fun.
Well, speaking of having that kind of crazy fun, if someone has ever played an instrument, if they were in band in high school or maybe even in college or maybe they just took lessons on something and never were actually in a band, but, you know, sometimes your parents make you take French horn lessons. I have a friend who teaches the horn, and she insists that that is the proper name, the horn. It's not...
It's not le horn, le French horn.
You're not supposed to put the French horn, but just the horn. Most people know exactly what you're talking about,
right,
when you say the French horn.
Right.
I actually had to ask somebody, a former band member, Heidi McMahon, I said, what's the difference between a band and an orchestra?
An orchestra, if I'm not mistaken, if Heidi would have responded the same way, most orchestras constitute violins as well, whereas a concert band or just a band doesn't usually incorporate strings.
Right.
Just the wind instruments.
Just the wind instruments.
And the percussion.
Percussion.
Yes.
Deborah Hunt would never speak to me again if I didn't acknowledge
percussion.
The percussion.
Now, the funny thing is every section of the band thinks they're the most important. Like, the percussion thinks, oh, we are the heart of the band. Or, oh, the trumpets are the melody of the band, you know.
Yeah.
And how would you know that, Brian?
Well, I am a self-confessed band fag, yes. I spent many years. I was one chair away from making All-State Band.
Oh, my
gosh. Look at that.
I was pretty good back in the day.
And that was on what instrument?
I played trombone.
Trombone.
The medley trombone.
Okay. And bandies out there who are listening, I am trying diligently to get Brian to join the band.
I just need an instrument and hopefully not get a divorce from my husband, because I've already done too much in the community. But
you can never do too much in the community.
Oh, you know, that's the way I feel. But David is like, ugh.
Well, maybe David can play an instrument.
We'll put him
on
the flute.
Have you ever talked to him about that? He plays flute?
No, we'll make him play flute.
Oh, but you'll just say, he doesn't know how, but...
No, something. I think he played trumpet. David, I forget what you played in band.
Well, David, darling, there you go. It's an activity that you're sure to see him every week at rehearsal.
So I'm always doing my things, but we don't really do things together.
So other people, if they're interested in joining the band, they can go to the website.
They can go to the website. They're more than welcome to come and view and listen to the band on Wednesday nights at Resurrection MCC in the Activities Building. We practice every Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. Everyone's welcome. Doesn't matter how many years you've been out of, you know, playing. Myself, I had been out of playing for 17 years.
I'm like 16 years. Something.
Yeah.
15, 16.
It's okay, because we take all skill levels.
Uh-huh.
And you can work your way back up.
Uh-huh. And what promoted you to say, hey, you know, I want to do that? That was, you know, was it fond memories of having been in band, or was it
anyone who was in band would know that was the best time of your life.
Right. I mean, bus trips and then marching competition.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it was so much fun.
Marching competition was the best. But I personally... it's a great social outlet. I had gone through some troubles with the relationship, and I came out, and I know I'm getting personal on this, but I just want to let everybody know that if you're looking for a good social outlet, that's what got me into it, and I've been loving it ever since. They're a great bunch of people. After rehearsals, we go out for social hour. It's a great time. A lot of great people.
And what is your position with the band?
I am currently the marketing director.
The marketing director, but do you play an instrument?
I do. I play clarinet.
Clarinet.
Of course, he was talking about the concertino for clarinet.
Oh, that's why he liked it so much. He said it was his favorite. Yeah. Well, that would explain that now, wouldn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
And so tell people again about this very special 30th anniversary concert. It's on...
This Friday at Zilka Hall, or in Zilka Hall, at the Hobby Center for the Performing Arts, 7:30.
PM. And tickets are available at the box office or through the website
at www.houstonprideband.org.
And can they contact you directly if they're interested in auditioning, or is that on the website, or how?
Certainly, there's contact numbers as well as email addresses there on. You can contact us at info@houstonprideband.org and express your interest.
And Rudy, we want to thank you so much for being with us on Queer Voices and talking about the Houston Pride Band. I'm you know, like a little tickled at this taking place, having watched the band over these many years, and looking forward to the concert. Is there anything that we didn't ask you about that you would like to add?
No, I just would like to close that we want to help everybody in the Pride community to get out there and enjoy this weekend's festivities, and the best way to start it off is by participating and partaking in our concert this Friday.
There you go.
It's a good kickoff to the weekend.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Coming up in the second hour of Queer Voices, we have J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. And next week, we have some people on to talk about a fundraiser, which will be happening on July 4th for Red and White Bayou, and that's for HGLBTPC. We also have Performing Queer Identity, a production of the Alley Theater Education and Community Engagement Department. And we have law partners from Netchman and Katine talking about special free services for those with HIV and AIDS. And Max Zando about his new work and CD.
Just in case we all didn't know, this is Pride. Yes, it is.
Is it this week?
It's this week. I don't know.
When's the parade?
Well, it is this Saturday.
Saturday
at 8:45 p.m.
Okay.
And looks like the weather's going to be good. It's never rained on our parade before.
Yeah.
Actually, it did one year, but the parade already started. And we're very, very pleased to have Kelly McCann here.
They have grand marshals, don't you?
Yes.
We have one here in the...
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Not only is she female grand marshal, but she's also executive officer of the AIDS Foundation, which is the organization, Grand Marshal organization.
Yay.
I have to tell you, this is a good year to be Kelly McCann and AIDS Foundation Houston. Very proud about our organization being the organization Grand Marshal.
Especially since this was a vote by the community.
That is exactly right. And I feel like it really is our community, my brothers and sisters, who granted me this huge honor, and I'm so proud.
Well, let's talk about the AIDS Foundation. We've talked about it before, of course, but how has things changed recently? The population is changing a bit, but also the concern about the money?
Well, you know, I was having a conversation just earlier with a friend of mine about how many concerns we have in this current economic environment and our concerns about the future as gas continues to go up and the price of everything continues to rise, then I have a significant concern that AIDS will not be a priority for a lot of our traditional funders and donors. So we will, you know, we're in the process now of creating some contingency plans, but the fact of the matter is I think all Americans better get used to the idea that we will all be doing with less, I'm afraid.
Absolutely.
Especially with food
yes.
prices going up.
Oh, yes, yes. And that will have an impact on everyone that we serve as clients. And then, you know, I'd like to remind everybody that's going to have an impact on everyone that works for me as well. So, you know, I've got concerns about the people that I employ as well as our clients, and we're going to do the very best we can to keep doing business as usual. But I think we're going to meet some very unique challenges I've never had to face before.
Absolutely. Well, how has in the past few years the face of AIDS changed?
Well, you know, have to acknowledge that the very early days back in the 80s, it was primarily a disease of gay white men. And then we saw in the 90s especially a shift where it began to include heterosexuals and especially people of color. And that is still the case today. Women of color, especially African-American women, they're accounting for 74% of the infections among women. And given that African-American women probably only make up about 13 to 15% of the population, that's a huge overrepresentation there. But at the same time that we have to have this focus on people of color, heterosexual people as well, we cannot lose our focus about men who have sex with men. And, you know, that's the term we use in my biz, but heck, it's Gay Pride Week. I'm just going to say gay men. We can't lose our focus on gay men either, because the epidemic, while it has leveled off in gay male communities, it has never gone away. You know, this thing is not dissipating. You know, the epidemic is not dissipating among gay men, and I have a, based on certain trends with syphilis and things like that, we have a concern that we're going to see an increase in HIV infections among young gay men, because we are seeing a lot more syphilis, and that's like ringing the bell for telling the future.
Is that a because of the new medications, that the lengthening of life? It's not like it was in the, you know, early 80s and all, whether you have it, it's a death sentence.
Absolutely.
And you just sort of went home and died.
Well, you know, and that's why the KS AIDS Foundation, as we were originally called back in 1982 when we were founded, that's the reason the AIDS Foundation was established in the first place, was to actually help men as they prepared to die. They were losing their jobs, losing their homes. They had nowhere to go, no way to support themselves or feed themselves, and that's why we were born. And happily, that's not the case today, but I do want to remind you, people do still die, sadly, from this illness. And of late, around our business, we've known of a few campers, young kids that come to our camps. A couple have died recently, and as well as some colleagues, and even a longtime volunteer of ours is gravely ill at the moment. And you know, it just drives home the point that, yes, things are a lot better, but it's not over yet. Mm-hmm. And the other point that I feel like I have to make is that the medications certainly make life longer and improve the quality of life for people with HIV, but it is not an easy road. And I think a lot of young people have gotten complacent, thinking that, oh, if I contract HIV, I'll just take the medicines. And
it's still a death sentence.
It will shorten your life. I will certainly say that. It's not going to be the 18 months of life expectancy post-AIDS diagnosis that we had in the 80s. You know, that was the average life expectancy, just 18 months.
Well, the reality is we don't really know what the long-term is going to be. I mean, these medications have been keeping people alive, but what happens 10, 15 years down the road?
Exactly. Or let's say, luckily, even some people in my life, what's going to happen 25 or 30 years down the road? I have a couple of friends that have been living with HIV 20 plus years and still going strong. But yes, we don't know. But I think it's probably safe to say that living with HIV AIDS will probably prevent you from reaching the average American life expectancy. I can't say that for certainty, but obviously you're dealing with a chronic health issue that could shorten, just like if you had chronic leukemia, diabetes, any of those things will impact your ultimate life expectancy.
Is there anything on the horizon? And I know that I had a dear friend that had a brother who had HIV in Australia, and he had it, but his body was fighting it naturally, and everybody from all over the world was studying his blood, and there are like four or five people like that around the world.
Yes.
Has there been any progress at all?
You know, a couple of things that are noteworthy here is that there are people, including people I know here in Houston, locally famous people with HIV, who have chosen not to take the medications, and they are taking vitamins or maybe just keeping healthy in terms of diet and all of that. So I think that's a possibility. I think a lot of it depends on, as you were saying, your natural immune, your natural immune system, your genetic makeup, and the strain of the virus, the strength of the virus that you contracted. But on the other hand, I'd like to point out that studies of people like this man in Australia, of people that do not have a gene, they have a faulty gene, which means they don't have the exact receptor site on their T cell that HIV needs to link up.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few people like that who are actually, the theory is, the descendants of survivors of the Black Plague. And it caused this genetic mutation, and they cannot become infected, it seems. There's lots of research going on about those long-term non-progressors like the man in Australia and these people who have the defective gene, all in an attempt to find a way to create a vaccine, but we are still a long way away. And in case you didn't read about it, it was, I guess, late last year, Merck, who had the most successful vaccine trial, current vaccine trial, they were already in third stage trying it on humans. Then preliminary results came in, and it was a dismal failure. So that was a huge setback. A vaccine is still at least a decade away. So that means bottom line is the only way to prevent HIV is to change your behavior. Be safe, use condoms, don't share needles. And if you do have HIV, then stay as healthy as you can. Get under a doctor's care and decide what your best course of treatment is.
And not everybody can take these medications either.
That is correct. You know, it's the two things is that some people find the side effects too difficult to manage. And there are medications to help you tolerate your side effects. But some individuals just decide that it's just too much and not something they can tolerate. Other individuals who may have contracted a resistant strain of the virus, they've lost the option of taking meds because somebody who had the virus and they gave it to that person, they had not taken their meds properly. The virus had developed a resistance to those medications, and unfortunately, this newly infected person infected with the resistant strain, they don't have the option. That's why it's important, even if you have HIV, you need to engage in safe sex, because you don't want to contract a different strain of this virus and even further complicate your own treatment.
Because if your immune system is suppressed anyway, you could be exposed to an even more virulent strain, and you're...
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and why do that to your body?
No, you know, absolutely.
Double
what
punch.
Specifically does the AIDS Foundation do?
We are a supportive services organization. We provide no medical care, but we provide linkage to care to all variety of medical services, because what we've found is that what we do provide is what draws people in, because people need food and they need a place to live before they can even begin to think about their medical care. And that's what we do. We have the Stone Soup Food Pantry, and it's the only AIDS food assistance service in the greater Houston area. We run a variety of housing programs. Some are brick-and-mortar facilities that we own, apartment complexes. Other programs we have are rent and mortgage and utility assistance programs for people already living in their own homes or apartments. We do camps for children with HIV so that they can have a normal camp experience in a medically and socially supportive environment. So a wide variety of things like that. And then we also do a great deal of prevention work, because that's our goal. We want to put ourselves out of business ultimately. We don't want any more new infections. And so we do a lot of primary prevention with the community, telling people how to avoid becoming infected. And then we also do work on secondary prevention, which is working with people who are already infected so that they don't pass the virus on to their partners.
Do most people follow instructions?
That's a good question.
Well, I guess that's a good question about all of us. You know, do we all eat as well as we should?
That's it, Jack, yeah.
Do we all not smoke, you know? Do we all
do you take every one of your antibiotics before, you know, you're...
All the way to the end.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And certainly it's gotten easier for a lot of people, because you used to have to take this and this and this at this time and this time, and the medications, I think, for a lot of people, maybe not everybody, have gotten simpler.
Oh, yeah. Across the board, I think we can even say for everyone, the number of pills that they have to take each day has been reduced. Lots of great combination medications and then other meds that they've been able to reduce the dosage without losing efficacy. So it is an easier route than it was in the 80s and
but
the early
still, 90s. But it's still expensive.
It's very expensive, you know, and they did a study. It was Johns Hopkins, Cornell, Boston University, and forgive me, another medical school did a study in 2004 of how much it would cost to survive a lifetime with HIV, and that was based on a life expectancy of 23 years post diagnosis, and at today's current prices, it was over $619,000, and that's not counting the cost of opportunistic infections and hospitalizations and things like that. That's just your basic HIV treatment and care for the course of a lifetime. So, yeah, it is a fiscally damaging virus as well.
About $30,000 a year.
It could be with, yes, definitely with certain medications, at least $15,000 to $20,000 a year that you're going to have to pay for, or hopefully you have insurance, or the current federal assistance programs stay in business.
Let's talk about the person, you,
okay.
Kelly.
Okay.
Where did you come from?
I am originally from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh.
But my family moved to Texas when I was about 3 or 4 years old. So I am very much a proud naturalized Texan. Have lived in Texas the rest of my life thus far. And grew up in Houston primarily in Spring Branch on the west side. Went to Spring Branch High School. And was one of the first people that I ever knew to come out in my high school.
Wait a minute. To be like head of one of these big organizations, I thought you had to be a straight woman. I'm joking, because we have two very good women who run the Montrose Counseling Center and Legacy.
Yes, absolutely. And I will tell you, I think women have a harder row to hoe, quite honestly, even in nonprofit. I think there are not as many female leaders as there should be. But certainly in our community here in Houston, we're very fortunate to have had opportunities for women, and I'm certainly the beneficiary of those opportunities. But you know, AFH is an organization that has always been very appreciative of diversity and very supportive of their GLBT clients and staff. And believe me, as the head lesbian on duty, I'm continuing that fine tradition.
So how did you start in this road through nonprofit? What did you study in school, and how did you begin to open up these opportunities for yourself?
Well, you know, I went to Sam Houston State University, and in part the reason I went there is it was only 75 miles away from my girlfriend who lived in Houston. So my orientation influenced me even then. But I studied psychology, wanted to get a PhD in psychology and become a college professor. And I made it to grad school, at least master's level graduate school, and started working for the prison system. And I started as an associate clinical psychologist in prison. And then my very good friend, a guy that is my soulmate, we met when I was in high school. And he was my best friend, and he was gay. And we didn't know it when we met each other. We didn't know the other was gay. But we eventually came out, and by the time that it was the 80s, and by the time I was working in prison after a few years, well, Robert became infected with HIV, and everything changed, because I wanted to be here in Houston, closer to him. So I left the prison, came to work for the local Mental Health and Mental Retardation Authority, and after he died in 1990, I decided I wanted to do more, and it took me a few years to get there. But then in 96, my first job in HIV was at Montrose Counseling Center, and I started as an HIV educator. I worked my way up to learn about not only the virology of HIV, but the industry of HIV, and in 2001 had an opportunity to go to work for AIDS Foundation Houston as the Vice President of Prevention Services, as we call it now, and it was following a guy that I met named Mike Miswa, and I met Mike in prison, is what we used to joke about, and he was doing prison work, and so was I, and he was CEO of AIDS Foundation Houston at that time, and I came over to work for Mike, and AFH, as I said, has just been a great place of opportunity for me and a place that I'm very proud to represent. And I have to say I'm very proud to do the work that I do. I've always wanted to have a career where I felt like I was making a difference in helping people. And the fact that the man that I love probably more than anybody, not in a romantic way, but certainly my soulmate, his contracting HIV certainly influenced my decision to do work in this field.
And how has the AIDS Foundation grown? Has it changed over the years?
We started out as an all-volunteer organization in 82.
And probably one of the first in the country.
Thank you for saying that. We're proud of that. Yes, probably behind Gay Men's Health Crisis in New York and AIDS Project LA in California. We may be right up there, third or fourth. Yes, one of the first in the nation. And since that time, AFH has grown to where we are now a $10 million annual agency. We provide a full array of services. We have over 100 employees, and we serve over 6,000 Houstonians every year. And then in addition to that, we're reaching 50,000 Texans with prevention messages. So I hope everyone in the community is as proud of AFH as I am. I'm certainly not the reason that AFH has reached the level it has. I'm merely one player in a long game. But Houston has a lot of reason to be proud of AIDS Foundation.
So this Saturday, you're going to be playing a dual role then. I mean, yourself being honored and the organization that you had being honored.
Yes.
So are you going to be on a float, or are you going to be riding in a car?
Well, I will be riding in the car, but my hope is that they'll arrange it so I can be right in front of or behind the AIDS Foundation Houston float, we're going to have about 70 of our staff out.
Wow.
It's going to be a huge show. Everyone is so proud, so thrilled. And believe me, it was a hard decision what to do, but I'm very proud to be honored personally as well, because I've been out since 1979. I have never felt the need to substitute pronouns. I've been a proud lesbian my entire life and happy to represent the community.
Well, that's great.
Thank you.
Fabulous. So what's the float going to look like?
Well, our float is going to be, and I want everyone to know, you know, we don't do professionally done floats at AIDS Foundation Houston. We always do it ourselves. And even doing it ourselves, we did win a little award last year. But this year we decided we needed to have a float befitting the honor of Grand Marshal. So we are having our first and probably only ever professionally created float, but it's going to be red and white, and of course you're going to have our logo, and we're going to have the theme going, so we got a disco ball and some disco music going on.
All right.
Yes, and then we're also going to have you'll see everyone, we have some really cool shirts that we made with our logo on the front set in a disco ball, and it'll be in the color of the rainbow. You'll see us out there, so looking very forward to it, and everyone, including board members, staff members, and even our volunteers. We've got so much interest. I think people are going to be impressed at the numbers.
Well, that's fabulous.
Yes.
That's absolutely
yes.
fabulous.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's, you know, in all seriousness, we honor the gay community and our gay founders, because you remember that we were not only serving people, gay men, but we were founded by members of the gay community, including folks like Ray Hill and Sue Lovell.
Not a lot of people remember that Sue Lovell had a brother who died.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And that's why Sue was involved from the ground floor and continues to be very supportive of AFH today. And so there are a lot of people in the gay community in Houston that were responsible for the beginning of this organization, and a whole lot of gay people who've been responsible for its success over the years.
And so, unfortunately, a whole lot of people who are no longer with us.
Yeah, yeah. That is the sad and poignant part about our going to work every day at AFH. We have frequent reminders about the ghosts that walk those halls.
Sure. Well, Kelly, it's great for you to join us. I really appreciate you coming out and talking to us.
Thank you.
We wish you the best of luck, you and Dalton, being
yes.
honored as Grand Marshals this year.
Yes, and Julie Eberly, the honorary.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very well deserved. And the parade starts this Saturday night along Lower West Timer at 8:45 p.m. They usually put the Grand Marshals up front, so you get to see them early in the parade. And, you know, hopefully the weather will be good as it always is. And having the nighttime parade really helps out a lot.
Sure does.
So, so that's really fabulous.
We are family, y'all.
Absolutely.
That's great. And in continuing with the tradition of what Pride is, there is an event tomorrow. Not tomorrow. I think it's Wednesday.
No,
I don't know why
it's Thursday.
It's Thursday. It's in East Parker and Sue Lovell, both city representatives, and Texas Representative Garnett Coleman will be honoring the fifth anniversary of Lawrence versus the state of Texas, that we winning the sodomy law. And it's going to be at Bering and James, which is at 805 Road Place, and that is right off of Taft, right near Allen Parkway. Right near that Federal Reserve building, which I actually was in last week.
It's just a beautiful building.
Amazing building. Unfortunately, they weren't giving out free samples. And, of course, Mitchell Kateen is going to be there. He's one of the attorneys that fought the case. So all that's happening. There's a number of things happening for Pride, and really the best source of getting all that information is going to Outsmart.
Absolutely.
Because there's there's a number of official things, but there's also a number of things that are Pride-related that Tim Brookover just did a fabulous, I know how hard he works to get all those events, and I'm sure Nancy Ford helps him out too.
Oh, yes.
Getting all those events published in this current edition of Outsmart. Pick it up, because it is it's a real thick,
yes,
thick
it is.
Issue this
and
month.
It's got all the information you need for Pride this time. One thing before we let you go,
yes.
I don't think you said how to contact the foundation.
Oh, we always appreciate that plug, Jennifer. Thank you. AIDS Foundation Houston, you can reach us by phone at 713-623-6796. That's 713-623-6796. Or you can always visit our website. We have a very interactive and dynamic website, so please go to www.aidshelp.org. That's aidshelp.org.
And the AIDS Walk, that website that you have for the AIDS Walk, is just fabulous.
Thank you very much. You know, we are still counting money, I'm happy to say, from the AIDS Walk.
So, great.
So anyone that still would like to support AIDS Walk, please go to the site, give us a dollar or two. At last count I had, we were, I want to say it was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $7,000 away from a million. And so
wow.
money is still Whoa, coming in and matching
wonderful.
Gifts. So, you know, nothing would make us happier than being able to say we...
Somebody write a check for $10,000 and send it so they can make it over the million.
Thank you, Jennifer. We're going to put you on the development team. You know, seriously, I would be so proud for us to be able to say that Houston had the first $1 million AIDS walk in the entire southwestern United States. So come on, everybody. Let's make
what
it happen.
What I love about that website is that you can give towards a particular team or person who has walked.
Absolutely. So you can support not only AFH, but you can support a friend or a colleague or even a business that you like to support by donating to their team. Yeah.
Well, and the other amazing thing is how the corporations have come along to help support.
You know, I have to give great credit to two in particular that are large supporters of AFH. Of course, Chevron is a huge supporter. They are the title sponsor of AIDS Walk every year. And then Wells Fargo is the supporter of our World AIDS Day luncheon. They're the title supporter of that. So two local corporations. There are a whole bunch of others, too. We can thank Macy's and Marathon and Deloitte and Ernst & Young, and I could go on. But certainly, we have a great deal of corporate support. We have a great deal of financial support. But the bottom line is the most vital support to a nonprofit organization like AIDS Foundation Houston are individual donors. And believe it or not, that $5 or $10 from the small donors, those are what add up and make the most significant impact to us. Not to say we don't love our corporations, but it's the individual donors who we are on your back. We have all that we are to thank because of those people.
Give us your contact information one last
time.
Okay.
The best thing is the website, www.aidshelp.org, and the phone number, 713-623-6796.
And before we go to J.D.'s Queer Music Heritage, J.D. was actually mentioned, along with this radio show, in the current issue of Time Magazine about what makes a gay song.
Is that what? Really? I'll
yes.
have to go pick that up.
Yes. J.D. works incredibly hard putting this together once a month, and he also gets us a lot of songs that relate to what's going on for our show, because, you know, pretty much for J.D., the definition of what a great gay song is, it's either sung by, written by, or the words are about GLBT community.
Hey.
And so I'm really glad that he got this little bit notoriety in Time Magazine, the current issue. So we're going to go to Queer Music Heritage for this month of June.
Can I turn to? You give me something I can hold on to. I know you think I'm like the others before. We saw your name and number on the wall. Jimmy, I got your
Mark Weigel. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. That song was called Marry Me, and was by a duo who got together for just that recording. Drag artists Hedda Lettuce and Yolanda called themselves, with tongue firmly in cheek, the Chixie Dicks. I'm J.D. Doyle, and welcome to my June show. And this show will be all about songs about gay and lesbian marriage. I've been collecting songs on this subject for some time now, and have been thinking for a while of devoting a whole show to it. In light of the recent court decision in California, and also because June is Gay Pride Month, well, this seemed like a good time to do it. I'll also mention that I've set up a special page of my website, queermusicheritage.com, for gay marriage songs, and I've collected over 65 of them, and you can download them all from that page, as I've set it up as a resource for the media or just for folks wanting songs for their own wedding events. Of course, I can't play 65 songs on this show. That would take, 3 to 4 hours. So I'm going to showcase some of the best, ones that approach the issue from different angles. Many of the songs I've collected are from around 2004, the year of the Massachusetts decision, and when gay marriage was a hot wedge issue in the general election. So some songs are political, and some are just on-topic love songs. But I've some older ones as well, and can't resist one accidentally on the subject from 1930 by a big band called the Clevelanders.
In my little hope chest, I'm hoping I'll open someday. I've the sweetest little bridal gown all tucked away, feathered slippers and the daintiest of lingerie. And waiting until Cupid knocks, then my dream man may pop up like a jack in the box from my
my little hope chest, I'm hoping I'll open someday. I've the sweetest little bridal gown all tucked away. From 1930, in my little hope chest by the Clevelanders. And as I said, that was accidentally on the subject. As back then, it was common for artists to sing songs without paying much attention to the gender. From that innocence, I'm going to a song doing a full frontal attack on the subject by one of our music pioneers whose political songs have been a delight since the mid-80s. Ron Romanowski was half of the duo Romanowski and Phillips, and in recent years has gone solo. In 2006, he recorded the song Sanctity of Marriage, which was released on his 2008 CD, Turn Up the Fun. I'll let Ron intro the song.
I can't even believe that gay marriage has finally become a national, you know, an issue that's being debated nationally. And so for years I've been wanting to write a song about it. So I just thought I'd attack the whole ridiculous issue of the sanctity of marriage, because heterosexuals, though there are, you know, many happy couples out there, there are a lot of miserable couples. And I think that heterosexuals really haven't done a great job of protecting the sanctity of marriage themselves.
In order to protect the sanctity of marriage, is it enough to keep the queers from getting hitched? Stopping there just puts the proverbial horse behind the carriage. Why not attack the problem at its very source? It's time to outlaw divorce. That's right, if we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together till death do them part, no matter how miserable they are. No more celebrities like Elizabeth Taylor, with more ex-husbands than anyone can recall. No more annulments coming from the Church of Rome. No more divorce attorneys getting filthy rich. No more relief from the 7-year itch. Because if we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together, if only for the kids. No matter how bad their marriage is, you'll say your vows, they'll throw some rice. All dressed up and looking nice, and now guess what? You're stuck for life. Woman and husband, man and wife, protect the sanctity of holy matrimony. Amend the Constitution to reflect this little change. No more second chances, no more alimony. If marriage needs defending as they claim, take another look at who's to blame. If we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together, whatever it takes. The sanctity of marriage is at stake.
That was Ron Romanowski. And many of you will recognize this next song by the Kinsey Six, blending fun and politics on their 2002 song, Locked Out of the Chapel of Love.
Spring is here and my domestic partner is too. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We'll put a sign that says just married on our Subaru. We'll say I can't because we can't say I do. And at a wedding ceremony worth manure.
Going to the chapel, but we cannot get married. From Vermont to Minneapolis, no, we cannot get married. Gee, I really love you, but we cannot get married. Locked out of the chapel of love.
Bells may ring and the sun may shine. Whoa, whoa, whoa. But 1,000 tax breaks will never be mine, no.
And when I hold you close, in half the states it's a crime.
Confused matrimony and love. Don't ask, don't tell an apple is you wanna get married. It's for vinegar and papal is to keep us from getting married. Gee, I really love you, but we cannot get married. Locked out of the chapel of love. Down in the Big Apple, no, we cannot get married. Clearly nowhere on the map, let us legally get married. Gee, I really love you, but we still cannot get married. Locked out of the chapel of love. Whoa, 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 whoa. Until people grapple with
songs about gay marriage come from a variety of musical genres. Also from 2004 is one by one of my favorite hip-hop artists. Here's Torrey Fix with the sanitized radio version of his song, Marry Me.
Late for the president, late for society and the Constitution. Baby, won't you marry me? Late for the politics, religious folks and hypocrites. Loving
if I have to hesitate on saying I did, because the public won't acknowledge my love for you. They ain't slanging no checks from under this roof right here. You don't hear me though, I promise you to do the best I can. I'm on both knees asking you to be your man. I'm talking wedding dance, diamond rings and things that bling. A ceremony held that it goes for a long way. Cause I love you, bitch, you. One really wanna get my life to tell the truth, I could really give less than a damn. And any relative that ain't relative to us will object to a union and invitation. No matter, as long as we got the rings and best man, true family and good friends. Oh yeah, and one more correction. You won't be my lover anymore, you'll be my husband, a wife.
Shown herself in all the glory. should be allowed to vote. Negroes should be allowed to be free. Should be. Gay should be allowed to marry. And lady should be allowed to vote. Negroes should be allowed to be free. Should be. Gay should be allowed to marry. And lady should be allowed to vote. Negroes should be allowed to be free. Should be. Gay should be allowed to marry. And lady should be allowed to vote.
Tory Fixes song into another political one by Scott Free. From his CD, They Call Me Mr. Free, was the battle hymn of the intolerant. Want some lesbian music on the subject? Let's hear one from 2006 by Janice Ian called Married in London.
We're married in London, but not in New York. Spain says we're kosher, the states say we're pork. We went in Toronto, the judge said amen. And when we got home, we were single again. It's hard being married and living in sin. Sometimes I'm not sure just which state I am in. Thank God I'm not Catholic, I'd be a mess. Trying to figure out what to confess. My passport in Sweden says I've got a wife. Amsterdam tells me I'm partnered for life. But back in America, land of the free, I'm a threat to the national security. If I were a frog, here is what I would say. It's hard being green, it's hard being gay. But love has no color, and hearts have no sex. So love where you can, and screw all the rest. Thank you very much.
Why do straight folks have such lavish weddings? When so many end up in divorce. Meanwhile, we're excluded from such lavish settings, except to decorate and do their hair, of course. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. We've got lots of love to flaunt, so we'll be tying the knot in Vermont. Straight folks give impractical presents. They'll return them in a week or so. His and hers occurs with omnipresence. Meanwhile, we shop LL Bean for our trousseau. Always a bridesmaid, finally a groom. 86, that scratchy bridal gown. We've made reservations for our honeymoon.
Black tux
Again, I wish I had time on this show to play complete versions of these songs, but you can hear them on my website. After Janis Ian was Lisa Rogers of the Therapy Sisters and Tying the Knot in Vermont from the CD Let's Put a Folk Singer in the White House. And Jamie Anderson and her song A Love So True. That was from her 2001 album called Listen. Next up is some vinyl history on the subject of gay marriage, and I'm starting with a straight actor and comedian. Sandy Baron released a number of comedy albums, and one from 1972 was called God Save the Queens. While the album did play up some stereotypes, for 1972 it was remarkably positive and got good coverage in the gay press. In an interview in The Advocate, Baron was asked why he recorded the album, and he said, "To me, the album just isn't about gay straight. It's like all my other comedy albums. Deep down, I'm always talking about the same subject. When's the majority going to figure out the minority's rights have to be respected?" See what you think. Here's the track, Do You Take This Man?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here in the sight of God and in the presence of these witnesses to join together Peter Sanford and Barry Johnson in holy matrimony, which is an honorable estate instituted of God.
Doesn't Peter look simply stunning?
You know what they say about brides.
You know, of course, Peter made that gown himself.
Oh, I know. He is also an unbelievable cook. Barry's a lucky man.
He certainly is. Is Peter going to continue working at the magazine?
Oh, of course. He's made that quite clear. He's not cut out just to be a homemaker. His job's very important to him. Barry understands that. That's what went wrong with Peter's first marriage.
Oh, I know. Harold just wouldn't allow him to be her.
Mm-hmm. They decided to get married so quickly.
They had to.
Oh, stop.
If any man can show just cause why Peter and Barry may not lawfully be joined together, let him now speak, or else hereafter forever hold his peace.
Reverend Perry, I have a reason.
Oh, Martin, don't. Not here.
Let me handle this, Mother. Now, look, I'm the father of the bride. I mean, Peter's father. I hate to have to do this, but I tried to reason with Peter before it got to this point. Now, I'm no dummy, and I'm not a stick in the mud. I read the articles about this kind of marriage. I know the percentages and the statistics.
Father, please, I love Barry.
I'm sure you do, Peter. I'm sure he's a nice enough guy, and I've got nothing against him personally. But darn it, Peter, these black-white marriages just don't work.
And here's another very interesting song on the subject, this time from 1987. One of our musical pioneers, both for his solo albums and his musicals, is Tom Wilson Weinberg. He has a great knack for capturing the politics and the heart of the issues that affect us. From his production called 10% Review is Wedding Song.
We had no wedding, no ceremony, no matrimony, we're just we. No invitations, no rice, no flowers, no bridal showers, we're we.
That date my brother set up with his friend didn't thrill her, but she tried to pretend. Romantic dreams of connubial bliss never entered my.
Began with a whole lot of loving, but no one gave us a toaster oven. Back when we fell in love, we hid it. We mark our anniversary from the night we first did it. No silver service, no hostess or hosting.
no bright, clever toasting, we're just we. No wedding cake cutting, no spun sugar topping, no champagne corks popping, we're we.
Back even further, on the front page of The Advocate in March of 1972 was the story of a marriage in Canada of two male entertainers, Michel Girard and Régent Tremblay. It was technically called a union contract, as it was drawn up by lawyers, so it was not really a legal marriage recognized by Canada. A few weeks later, they flew to Los Angeles, where Reverend Troy Perry performed a religious ceremony for them. Michel Girard and Régent Tremblay released an album together in 1972 called The Couple, with Michel singing and Régent on piano. The music was not political and the songs were all sung in French, but I still wanted to share a little of it to take us up to the break. You'll recognize the song, made famous by Edith Piaf, Hymn to Love.
Peut s'effondrer et la terre peut bien s'écrouler. Peu m'importe si tu m'aimes, je me fous du monde entier. Quand l'amour inondera les matins, ton corps frémira sous mes mains. Peu m'importe les grands problèmes, mon amour, puisque tu m'aimes.
Coming up, more gay and lesbian marriage songs of love, politics, and satire. But this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered art music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more Very Queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. Next are some very pretty songs, starting with one by Tret Fury called Wedding Song. It's from her 2002 album, My Shoes.
Love is something none of us should ever take for granted. Love is something that we often do. It can shake you to the core, and it can turn the planet, or it can sneak up in an old soft shoe. In the moments that were hardest hit, when life gets in the way, always keep in mind the vows we've got to keep. I will love you in the waking hours, the hours of the day. I will love you more each night we fall asleep. Don't lose sight, don't feel bound, just give thanks for the love we found.
brought you to me. So I will not refuse this blessing I've been given. Though some may disapprove, I'm in love with you. Love is always patient, and love is always kind. I know love is never ending. When I look in your eyes, so I'm down on my
Following Tret Fury was a duo called Emma's Revolution with This Love from 2004, and from the next year was Forever With Me by Nedra Johnson from her album Nedra.
How the world can change, it can change like that, due to one little word, marriage. See a palace rise from a two-roomed flat due to one little word, married. And the old despair that was often there suddenly ceases to be. For you wake one day, look around and say, somebody wonderful married me.
I'm Alan Cumming, and I'd like to have the legal right to marry a man.
And the old despair that was often there suddenly ceases to be. My girlfriend, but I'm not so my boyfriend married me.
Thank you very much.
Yes, that was Broadway star Alan Cumming, and he took the song Married from Cabaret and made it very gay. That track came from a 2006 concert CD called Wed Rock, a benefit for Freedom to Marry, which featured Lou Reed, Margaret Cho, John Cameron Mitchell, Bob Mould, Sleater Kenny, LaTigra, and others. I mentioned before the break that I had some songs of satire for you, and these two are by straight artists, but certainly done using their humor in a positive way. I'll start with Mark Bridge and the song Same Sex Marriage.
Sex rug, while others hug and kiss. If variety's the spice of life, my sex life's gone amiss. So call me staid and boring, but I'm as happy as a clam. You're my same-sex partner,
and I'm your same-sex man. What's all the fuss about same-sex marriage? You know I hear about it every day. I don't need no high court ruling. I don't care what they got to say. I'm perfectly adjusted, and I'm not even gay. I'm in a same-sex marriage. I have the same sex every day.
Yes, that's a one-joke song. So I'll move along to an actor-comic named Edith Gross and a song more tongue-in-cheek called It's All Because.
Out the door, that's where she went, never to return no more. I wondered why the sanctity that was our marriage had to die. Who knows what for? When she fled, I worried it's because of something that I did. But she left a note that freed me of my worries and gave me hope. Here's what it said. It's because the gays are getting married, all because of the gays. It's obvious now, all the pain I can't explain. That's cause the gays to blame. Like the other night, I was walking down the street just trying to find some food to eat. And then I stubbed my toe. All because those gays are getting married. All because of the gays. That everything's not right.
And it escalates from there, but I encourage you to check the song out on YouTube for the very neat video of it. We're going to a couple gay weddings now. The first by the very talented Kira Hartwood and Miriam Davidson, who together are Wishing Chair. I've been an admirer of their music for many years. This song is called Outlaw Wedding, and it's from their 2005 CD, Underdog.
Upstate. We're in a hurry, don't wanna be late. We're gone.
going to a wedding. The weatherman says it's gonna be warm. There's no threat of a thunderstorm. The guests and the honeybees all gonna swarm. We're going to a wedding. Biff and Tony's wedding. The sun is shining, Biff is sweating. Tony's thinking about all the gifts they'll be getting. Biff and Tony's wedding. Biff's mom has the whole thing catered, bartended and handsomely waited. Biff's brother hired a wedding band. Everything's going the way that they planned. Biff's dad helped pick out the rings. He's singing, who can tell what any life brings. He's blinking a tear from his twinkling eye. Biff says, come on, Dad, you're gonna make me cry. Biff and Tony's wedding. Tony's glowing, Biff still sweating, which is the only thing upsetting about Biff and Tony's wedding. The minister blesses and speaks of God, which nobody there finds the least bit odd. He tells me if he is gonna lead his flock, he can't be trying to turn back the clock. The little ones went to the beach for the day. Mother thought it prudent to keep them away. Tony's folks didn't show, 'cause what they think the Bible say. Guess they're gonna just stay home and pray. They're missing all the food, they're missing all the fun. They're missing Biff and Tony's love in everyone. They're missing all the tears, they're missing all the brew. They're missing all the music and the dancing too. At Biff and Tony's wedding, no one is sad and no one is fretting. Except Biff and his son, he's still sweating. Biff and Tony's wedding. At Biff and Tony's wedding, there's no shotgun and no bloodletting. No regrets.
There you had two different weddings, starting with Wishing Chair, and I rushed from that wedding to another, Biff and Tony's wedding, brought to us by Dave Hall on his album Places. That was from 1999, making it one of the earlier songs about a gay wedding. An artist I quite like is Stephen Frantz, and his second album, Skins and Shirts, featured two songs about this subject. I asked him about them.
When Is It My Turn was interesting. I got an email from Sony Pictures when they were producing the movie Wedding March with John Stamos. I think it was last year, 2007. And they were just soliciting, I guess, different gay songwriters, probably throughout music and Queer Music Heritage Year site, that people they found for songs for the movie. And so I submitted the song. Of course, it just gets selected, unfortunately. But I thought it was a good song, and thought it was great for the album.
I've seen a thousand movie kisses, been the groomsman all my life. I wanna be the leading man sometime. It's not that I am uncommitted, I work hard to get it right. But not enough, it seems, to win this fight. Still I go on and on, believing in myself, 'cause I am strong, so strong. But it's always someone else. When is it my turn to be the man up on the altar? When is it my turn to have all that say that I do? And is it some reason that I have got to live this life harder? All that I want is to share my love, the one that I choose. So is there someone who will try to make sense of all these hurtful lies? I don't want to be forgiven, I just want my piece of the pie. So brother, can you look me in the eye and say I'm wrong, so wrong, believing in my love when it's so
was written for my husband, Rick, on our one-year anniversary after getting married in Provincetown, May 24th, 2004, about a week after the state of Massachusetts passed a law allowing same-sex marriage.
Something's happening to me today. Something I never thought. I once upon a time had not been in my reach, blocked by a door without a knob.
Slip in a song that is not lyrically about a gay wedding, but would be the perfect song to play at one. Peter Donnelly included it on his 1998 CD, A Sure Thing, and I think it's just beautiful. Here's an edited version of Love With Me.
Walk with me through all my days. Sleep with me and know you're safe. Dream with me the whole night long. Wake with me to greet each dawn. Work with me throughout the years. Build with me, we'll build a home. Play with me, you bring me joy. Rest with me and hold me close. Live with me through pain and toil. Laugh with me, unleash my soul. Cry with me, our tears be one. Hold on to me, your pain is mine. Talk with me, keeping life anew. Lay with me, I'm by your side. Dance with me, our steps in time. Sing with me, our songs unsung.
That's so nice. Peter Donnelly and Love With Me. I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Ron Romanowski, Stephen Frantz, and, coming up, Roy Zimmerman for the comments on their songs. Remember, on my site, I've got a whole section for gay marriage songs, so you can visit that and also the page for this show there. That's at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I've featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. I knew immediately when I decided to do this show what would be my closing song, as it's my favorite gay marriage song. And get this, it's by a straight artist. His name is Roy Zimmerman, and he does just wonderful political songs, all bent decidedly to the left. The song is called Defenders of Marriage, and it was originally a live concert track on his 1998 album, Kamak Sutra. But he re-recorded it a couple years ago as a studio version for the album Faulty Intelligence. So, continuing the story, I decided to do this show, and as it happened, that same week, Roy Zimmerman was in town for a house concert. So I was able to meet him and also ask him about the song.
Well, it's been around for a while now. unfortunately, you know, it's an issue that keeps coming up. I wrote it originally just before the California Night Initiative, which you might remember, the little state initiative sponsored by a state senator by the name of Pete Knight, who spelled his name with three K's for some reason. That was kind of the first salvo over California's bow on the issue. And since then, the song Defenders of Marriage, it was actually before the DOMA Act, before the Defense of Marriage Act that I wrote that. It's a song that I hope is doing some good work in the world.
Every time we think about same-sex marriage, it makes us sick to our guts. I mean, two people who want to commit to a stable, monogamous, lifelong relationship, what are they, nuts? It's unnatural. Now, a man should not lie with a person who is a guy. He should only lie to his wife. The Bible is clear. We're defenders of marriage in three-button suits. We'll raise our double standard and see who salutes. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married. Every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, two people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third, that a family's based on obligation and fear. We're defenders of marriage, connubial narcs, ever vigilant and patriotic patriarchs. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married. One summer evening when my woman was doing laundry, I shared a six-pack with an old John Bircher. And oh so wisely he imparted an ancient quandary to ponder. He said it's nature versus legislature. Are people born gay or do they turn gay just to piss off Dick Army? We're an army of dicks with a militant stance. Let's get the government out of our lives and into our pants. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married and have their insurance carried and be beneficiaried and be next to the ones they love when they are buried.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.